passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to today's post-daily news update for Friday, July the 1st. It is the beginning of the month here. I am leading the ship. John Pollock, who did a great job, of course, with Erica Marcotte in this space today. He will be joining me tonight for Rewind a SmackDown / Rampage. And because it is the beginning of the month, I wanted to remind everybody that it is the very best time to sign up for the Post Wrestling Cafe. G1 coverage begins on July the 16th, we also have Rewind a SmackDown and Rampage every Friday, Rewind Away every other week, MCU Later, where we'll be talking about Ms. Marvel, as well as Thor Love and Thunder later on this month, and access, of course, to our entire 400 bonus show archive. So if you enjoy this show and if you want to support the channel, consider signing up at postwrestlingcafe.com. But joining me today in John's place is Kate from Montreal. Happy Canada Day, Kate.
Happy Canada Day to you, too. Thank you for having me on. This has been a while since I've done the news. So.
Has it really? It's been too long, and you picked a good show to be a part of because we have a lot of stories. And from what I understand, you are on very little sleep. So this should be very fun.
Yeah, I am. So if this goes off the rails, it's entirely my fault. I slept between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. And it's, I'm feeling pretty loopy.
We got you on a good day. I can tell this will be a good one already. So let's just get into some of these top stories here. The first of which is involving AEW's Blood and Guts on Wednesday. AEW Dynamite's Blood and Guts, the June 29th episode of Dynamite from Detroit, featuring Blood and Guts, averaged 1,023,000 viewers and a 0.36 in the 18 to 49 demographic per Brandon Thurston and Show Buzz Daily. It was Dynamite's highest viewership since March the 23rd and their highest in the demo in a month since the June 1st episode from Inglewood, California. Dynamite was number one among cable originals in 18 to 49, males 18 to 49, 18 to 34, 12 to 34, and 35 to 49, well ahead of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which finished second on cable with a 0.27. Females 12 to 34 were also up 21% compared to the 4-week average, as were people 25 to 54. However, as noted by Brandon Thurston on the WrestleNomics Patreon, which you should also sign up for at the beginning of the month, Dynamite was actually down 3% in the demo for the month compared to June of 2021, despite a shorter NBA Finals this year. nonetheless, the press train from Tony Khan and AEW was in full effect here. Tony Khan tweeting, thank you to everybody who watched Dynamite last night, where we were Wednesday's number one show on cable and satellite. We had over 1 million viewers in the U.S. alone and many more all over the world. 2 years in a row, Blood and Guts is at number one. Warner themselves tweeted something out as well. But yeah, Kate, Blood and Guts doing well. Any surprise to you?
I wouldn't exactly say it's a surprise as much as a validation, which is that number among female viewers. I think there is a pernicious myth about within the wrestling community that women don't like the more violent aspects of professional wrestling. I've never bought into that. I mean, both because it's not a particular issue for me, but I just don't see it. And even if you look at things like movie viewing, women, I think it's because women don't say watch action movies as much as men. But if you look at the audience for things like horror movies, women watch them just as much as men. So that women's number, I think, should put to bed any kind of debate about whether or not women are willing to tune in for a very violent show. Cause I mean, you're calling it Blood and Guts. It's Blood and Guts. You know what you're getting. And so to do a number like that, especially among younger women, is pretty impressive, because AEW has struggled with the female demographic more than any other.
It's a very well promoted show. To see numbers up across the board is, I think, understandable and absolutely right. Great point. You know, I'm sure plenty of people who watch horror movies are not just men. So that is a interesting note here. But maybe a more interesting note is also from our own John Pollock, who said in Canada, the show averaged 161,000 viewers and 93,900 in the 25 to 54 demographic on TSN2, which doubles the recent average for the previous four episodes at 79,000 viewers, basically. So, it was Dynamite's highest viewership in Canada since December the 1st of 2021. It also defeated Raw in the 25 to 54 demo, while Raw was ahead in overall viewers. So, doing tremendously well this episode is on in Dynamite. So very interesting as well.
I think in Canada too, the interesting thing about that is that it's disproportionately high. Like if you look at the population, it should be about 10%. So 160,000 to 1 million means that they actually proportionally got a larger audience in Canada.
Absolutely. And it does, of course, continue to signify the great abundance of interest in AEW north of the border. So I have to imagine this, you know, further incentivizes Tony Khan, if he's not already incentivized enough already, to bring a show over here. So that is AEW Blood and Guts. Now, further on the AEW front, we have some preliminary information about Forbidden Door. This comes to us from Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics again, who tweeted yesterday that Forbidden Door has sold about 127,000 pay-per-view buys between AEW's usual carriers and New Japan World. You can find further detail, of course, on his WrestleNomics Patreon, but AEW's usual carriers and New Japan World would, of course, indicate, traditional fight, traditional pay-per-view, as well, of course, New Japan World here, where Brandon indicates that 7,000 of these 127,000 would have come from New Japan World. If we were to take this number, which of course is a projection and a very educated estimate, but final numbers may differ. If we were to take this number and place it into the context of AEW, this would place Forbidden Door behind every AEW pay-per-view since Double or Nothing 2021, the last pay-per-view without CM Punk, and also the last pay-per-view to take place from Daily's place during the pandemic. So, this is also, I think, important to note that it is, of course, a co-promoted event. So we're currently unaware of how revenue is split between the two promotions. But obviously, Kate, you know, this card from the beginning was very much an experiment, plagued with a number of variables.
I can't speak. Obviously, it's anecdotal, but I know I spoke to a number of people in the run up to the show who, as big names like Punk, like Danielson, dropped out. They said, "Okay, well, you know what? I'm not gonna I'm going to pass on this one. I think also you're talking about a card where a huge chunk of the performers were going to be unknown to the near mythical casual audience. And that makes it a slightly more difficult sell. I think everyone projected that this was going to do less than the more recent AEW pay-per-views. I do notice, I remember John sort of setting his bar around 115, so they exceeded that. And so I'd say that's pretty successful given everything that went wrong and the newness of the idea and the fact that I also wonder if it might have been hampered a little by the fact that New Japan in the last year or so since COVID has taken a bit of a hit in terms of their reputation. They are not the hot promotion they used to be. I think that they're starting to feel that way again, but they didn't have the cachet that they might have in like 2018.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of bars, I mean, Tony Khan's own bar, as he revealed in the press conference, was 100,000. Now, I mm-hmm. have to assume that maybe this was a qualification that was adjusted after CM Punk dropped out, and maybe after a number of other injuries took place. Nonetheless, well above what he has publicly stated was his expectation. So I have to consider it a success. And again, for further detailed breakdown, including breakdowns of net revenue compared to other AEW pay-per-views, do subscribe to the WrestleNomics on Patreon. Also, check out WrestleNomics Radio this Sunday on the free post feed or on WrestleNomics' own YouTube channel for, I'm sure, a further breakdown and an analysis of these numbers. Logan Paul has signed with the WWE. This was, I believe, breaking news during yesterday's post-daily news update, but we do have, of course, information and confirmation, or at least a photo in this case, of Logan Paul signing his WWE contract with Stephanie McMahon and also Paul Levesque here. So Logan Paul has signed. He is the social media influencer and entrepreneur, took to the news that he has signed with WWE. Paul made his pro wrestling in-ring debut at WrestleMania 38. This past Monday on Raw, Miz stated that he and Paul were going to be teaming up again at SummerSlam on July 30th, although we will see if the angle evolves, as the two recently had a split after WrestleMania. Your thoughts, Kate, on the signing of Logan Paul?
I think it's predictable. He got a good reaction among WWE fans for his match at WrestleMania. I think that the baggage attached to him could actually end up working in his favor with a lot of WWE fans. Personally, I have no patience for the man. I'm not interested in seeing him. I don't even want to comment on his skill or his progress in the ring, because I'm not interested in seeing him, and I'm never going to get behind him. And that's my personal thing. I think for me, one of the tipping points was the comments he made a couple years ago, against an opponent of his, I guess his partner had an abortion, and Logan Paul said that that was murdering babies. He later clarified that he's pro-choice. I think hell of a week to pick to announce that signing, WWE. Bravo.
Yeah, you dug out this link, you know, from 2019 that I was not personally aware about. I mean, essentially, you know, as you stated, here's the article here. Don't really want to maybe specifically say it, but, you know, in the midst of the trash talk with this fight with KSI, he made a comment about how, you know, KSI had many abortions with prior partners, and he was, you know, essentially going to, he was using it as trash talk. Yeah, very, very questionable. But I think, you know, one of only many controversies attached to Logan Paul in particular, you know,
that was a personal breaking point for me. Other people may have other ones, or they may be fine with him. And I think, to me, that comment crossed a line that MJF had made a joke, sort of not along the same lines, but about the same subject. And I didn't have as much of a problem with that just because of the tone. And because, anyway, that is. it is what it is. I suspect that he'll do well for WWE. I don't think they would have signed him if they didn't believe that he was going to be a draw.
You know, you look no further than the figurehead of the company himself, you know, who is very much kind of in the midst of, I think, weathering negativity in the mainstream press for things that he had prior actions. And for whatever reason, you know, it feels like people like that can thrive in a professional wrestling environment, which I don't know what that says about the professional wrestling audience, or just the fact that, you know, I don't know, there's a level of dislike that is appreciated, I suppose.
But it's the heat. The heat is real. They want that. I would say that also, I mean, Linda McMahon, after the Supreme Court decision, tweeted her support. Having run twice for the Senate as a pro-choice candidate, she tweeted that the Supreme Court decision was a great victory. If I were running a professional wrestling promotion, I would think very carefully about the possible downside of women losing autonomy over their bodies insofar as it would affect their ability to do that kind of work, just as a business decision.
Now, on the other side, do you feel like there's an element of their thinking that feels like they are gaining any sort of support through, or do you think that, you know, it's, I mean, we've seen a pretty apolitical stance from, you know, at least WWE products on TV itself. I don't know what sort of jurisdiction they would have. Obviously, if it's Linda, maybe, like, you know, Vince would be like, hey, like, watch this. But she's also a political figure.
Yeah. And look, she was a member of cabinet. She still runs a very large pro Trump Republican super PAC. So that's, you know, I think that it's very possible to maybe separate her opinions from the public position of the company. Look, I think that they have very much positioned themselves as apolitical. And I notice more and more that that is not just the company, but that it's filtered down through the talent. I think that there are a number of performers who are maybe quite outspoken on issues before. And I guess this time, given that there was a huge reaction among indie performers and even and AEW performers as well, although AEW took no stance either way, there was very, very few people within WWE who said anything. So I think maybe there is a tendency to try to keep the company and everyone in it fairly neutral politically, which I guess if you're trying to cast the widest net in terms of grabbing an audience, then any company will tell you try to offend the fewest people possible.
We move on now to Jeff Hardy, where Jeff Hardy story came out yesterday, where per PW Insider, Jeff Hardy on Tuesday has filed a written plea of not guilty to his DUI arrest in Florida earlier this month. Hardy is slated for arraignment this coming Tuesday, July 5th. The DUI charge is his third offense in 10 years, which in Florida is a felony that is punishable with up to 5 years in prison. PW Insider also notes that Hardy is currently out on bail and that he had entered a rehab facility on June the 21st. And despite the fact that, you know, I am certainly not a lawyer, Kate, what is and you're not a lawyer as well, but what is perhaps your understanding of the how common something like this is in these situations?
I'm not a lawyer. I have worked in the past as a researcher, which included doing some research into legal statutes. There's an informative thread or post on Reddit from someone who purports to be a lawyer. Can't be confirmed, but what this person said rang true. Agreed with what I knew about things like rules of discovery, which is that it's almost a not guilty plea can be almost a form of a placeholder because of the delays in defense lawyers getting material for discovery, which is just the disclosure that prosecutors have to make. So this may not show an intention to actually dispute the charge, which I think, given the evidence that we've heard against him, is pretty damning. This may just be a tactic to give them time to review all of the evidence against him, to determine if there are any technical grounds on which to contest the charges, if the arrest was done properly, if something like the breathalyzer test was administered properly, those, mm-hmm. you know, and look, a lawyer should do those things. That's mm-hmm. what they're there to do. So I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that this is truly a not guilty plea in the way that we normally understand it. So,
yeah. Yeah, that is my understanding as well. So, you know, despite how the headline looks, even though it is a very accurate headline, of course, the reporting, of course, is accurate. There's a bit more nuance to just, you know, simply reading Jeff Hardy pleads not guilty. Seems to be a pretty commonplace action ahead of everything. So we will get further updates on that. Better Call Saul, yes. Further updates also here to Alan Angels, who on... what is it? Thursday mm-hmm. confirmed that his contract with AEW has expired. Let me bring up Mr. Alan Angels here. Alan Angels took to social media yesterday to confirm that he is no longer with All Elite Wrestling and that his contract has expired. Let's read a bit about his statement here. Alan Angels says, "Time to grind. As of June 30th, my AEW contract has expired. Nothing but grateful for the 2 years I spent there. I love AEW. It was slash is the best place ever to work. Got to wrestle some of the best wrestlers in the world on a weekly basis, as well as travel to some of the most amazing cities and meet some of the best fans in the world. There are no hard feelings between myself and AEW or Tony Khan." Now, Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful also had a chance to speak to Ellen Angels, where he revealed that he was told about the non-renewal about a month and a half ago. He also revealed that he had turned down a per-appearance deal. In the interview, he says, "I feel me going on the indies and showing people what I can really do and showing people that I am a good fucking wrestler. I feel that will raise my stock. Not saying it's impossible to do that in AEW, but I guess the perception, how fans perceive Alan Angels, is that I'm a bottom guy in Dark Order, and I feel I can change that outside of AEW. Angels is currently 24. He already has indie dates booked, and this, of course, Cake, follows Stu Grayson's exit from the Dark Order. What are your thoughts on Alan Angels' exit, as well as the future of the faction?
I think that the faction is on borrowed time, honestly. They've lost, obviously, tragically, they lost their leader. Losing Grayson, who to me was probably the greatest raw talent in that group, at least in ring, I think did not bode well for it. Angels is slightly different than Grayson to me. I think they're both tremendously talented, but as you said, 24 years old. He has lots of time to prove himself, and I suspect that the door is very much open for him to return at some point to AEW. I think he'll have no problem getting indie bookings. I fully expect that he's going to show up on GCW sooner rather than later. And I think this is the best move for him, because he really needs to get more reps. He needs to be able to develop his own distinctive character. And way we've talked about this every single time I've been on post, 3 hours of TV a week with that roster, it's just, it's not tenable. The people who are not at their peak are going to get trampled to a certain extent. And so I think that this is absolutely the best move for him.
I'm shocked that this dude was born in 1998. He is incredibly
shocked that anyone was born in 1998.
Jeez, so that means when he signed, like he was what it was like two, three years ago. Like he was incredibly young. So I mm-hmm. agree with you, Kate. You know, when he first signed with AEW, I mean, at that point, it looked like there was space for a guy like Alan mm-hmm. Angels. Now, not so much. And if he was just going to stay here in this system, continuing to work dark on occasion, and not really being much of a presence, I do agree. Yeah, this is probably a better move for him to make. If he is as motivated as he sounds in this statement, if he can go out there, have bangers, really build up his name value, and then potentially return in the future, boy, would a reunion with the Dark Order be wonderful. Maybe 5 years down the line. Wouldn't that mm-hmm. be great? But But it's inspiring, honestly, you know, to see guys like leave their comfort zone and to go out into the unknown because they believe in themselves.
The other good thing that I would say about this is the fact that he mentioned that he was told about the non-renewal a month to 6 weeks ago. That has been a problem that we've heard about with AEW. And this is, it was something that came up with like Marco Stunt and Joey Janela, that they said that they're just, you know, they've been sort of ghosted and were left to figure out for themselves more or less. Now, obviously that is their version, but it did come out from a couple of people. The fact that he's saying that, no, this was handled properly gives me hope that the company has once again learned from past mistakes and are growing accordingly. So that's I hope that's a positive sign for the future.
I'm very curious to see what they do with the Dark Order. I believe Dynamite is in Rochester next week, you know, of course, which is sort of you know, spiritual home base, of course, the former the home of Brody Lee. So I'm curious to see what sort of Dark Order involvement we get on the show itself. And those dwindling numbers, I think, you know, the optics of it probably aren't great. You know, like at some point they're going to have to maybe mention the, their dwindling numbers. But yeah, how, you know, do they have one last storyline to explain perhaps a breakup? Do they add more members? Or do they just continue and, you know, just occasionally lose a member here and there while still somehow maintaining what this is? Don't know. We shall find out.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We have some updates to New Japan Pro Wrestling talent here as a big news cycle continues to roll on here. Changes have been made to the upcoming New Japan road shows. Alex Coughlin is currently out with a left calf muscle injury. He is off the show, as is Yudo Nakashima, who has a left elbow injury. Yo has tested positive for COVID, although he should be cleared for July 5th and his never six-man tag team title shot. Doki is also currently out after being in contact with somebody with COVID. So for more updates on those lineup changes, please visit NJPW1972.com. Our last story here, Kate, or at least our second last story, maybe we should bring up. There was a match. There was a GCW event that took place on Thursday called Dead on Arrival, DOA, from Detroit.
Almost Truth in Advertising.
This featured a match between Slade and Hoodfoot, two deathmatch wrestlers that wrestle for GCW. And now, you know, GCW, I think, you know, often comes up. I think what makes the most headlines with GCW for the greater audience, you know, are things like the comedy gimmicks, perhaps, you know, maybe Effie, maybe just, you know, Joey Janela setting his foot on fire. But their bread and butter really is deathmatch wrestling. And for some of these shows that we don't often hear the most about, Well, a lot of deathmatch wrestling occurs, and this is a case where we are hearing about it because something went wrong in this match. I'm not going to play the spot, but I'm going to at least show a bit of a still shot here. No blood. Don't worry about it, everybody. But basically, this was a match between Slade and Hoodfoot where the two of them were using broken light tubes to stab each other in the arm. This resulted in a really bad laceration from Hoodfoot. Referee is trying to tape up this cut with medical tape.
It almost looks like kinesio tape. And it's just like, no, that's not what it's for.
It was a right roll of tape that was not going to do shit to this cut, okay? And of course, as wrestlers and deathmatch wrestlers, you know, they're trying to continue the match. Referee is trying to step in to try to stop it. Eventually, Brett Lauderdale decides to check it out himself, and he was the one to stop the match. So we do have some updates, of course, from some of those parties involved, including Hoodfoot, or including Brett Lauderdale, first of all, who says, quick update, Hoodfoot had a nasty gash, but he is okay. Wanted to go back to the ring to finish, but that's not going to happen tonight. Ha ha. He's headed to the hospital for a few stitches and will live to fight another day. Hoodfoot also tweets that sometimes you get dumb ideas that work out. Yeah, this wasn't that. I appreciate all the love and messages. I'm going to bounce back soon. Kate, you've had a chance to see the spot. What was your reaction to it?
It was... it was bloodier than blood and guts. It was I think what shocked me was that this Slade was at first it looked like he was really jamming this light tube into the guy's arm. When I watched it again, it looked more like it might have been accidental. But for Christ's sake, this is exactly the kind of injury that made Nick Gage die for several minutes is a severing of the brachial artery. And it's all like, you look at it and the wound's almost in the exact same place. It's like, you can use a light tubes, but just, you know a little bit of human anatomy, know the areas of the body that are difficult to, that are dangerous to hit. It's much safer to take one of those things over the head or across the chest than it is to take it in the arm or the leg. And again, because there is this such a well-known story within the wrestling community about how this particular type of gouge can go wrong, it shocks me that they weren't more careful. I'm very glad to know that he's recovering. I did notice that he is now forced to turn to running a GoFundMe. I don't think it's a GoFundMe. I think he's just put his PayPal address out there to offset some of the medical costs. And I wish him the best with that. You can check it out. The link is on his Twitter account. And I forwarded it a little earlier today. I wish him the best, but just... I think if you're going to do this kind of match, I have a fair amount of patience for death matches. I enjoy them. I really do love the use of light tubes, but you got to be smarter about how you use them. This is a very dangerous form of wrestling and you have to be smart about it.
I am incredibly conflicted when it comes to deathmatch wrestling because like when it's great, I really enjoy it. There's nothing like it. You know, it is like the most kind of like, I don't know, guttural feeling like you can possibly have as a professional wrestling fan. And I love that the variation of this thing that we all like exists as extreme as it is. You know, I think there's a real place for it. But when I see spots like this, I just have incredible concern for what is going on? Like, how are we subjecting, like, how are we allowing people to do this for entertainment? And, you know, even like the idea that a wrestler himself has to put up a PayPal to get money to try to pay for his medical bills, that to me raises many red flags about how GCW, like, what is GCW's role in this and how are they, you know, consciously able to facilitate something like this without having the financial backing to deal with potential the medical costs or potentially worse that could happen here?
And I think that it's funny because the last time that I was on the news, or one of the last times, was the show that was the day after, or the show after Joey Janela set his foot on fire. And there were some concerns about that, about how the people on site didn't seem to know how to safely deal with the fire and put it out. There's something comic, but also deeply unsettling about the ref just trying to tape up this gaping wound that is bleeding profusely. Again, I think that this is the kind of thing, it can be done. There is an art to it, but you need to have people on hand who know what they're doing, and you need to sort of like, with these really dangerous spots, they need to be worked out before, and you need to know that there is someone around who can deal with it when things go wrong, because there will be instances of that. There always will be in wrestling, but particularly in this style.
I want to put a little chat up here from John Pine, who says, really, John Pine, of course, our GCW reviewer, he's got a report right now about the whole show, including the injury on postwrestling.com. John Pine says, really unfortunate injury last night. I'm glad Hoodfoot is okay. The spot was pretty stupid, but the assumed risk is part of the allure for the competitors and the fans. It did overshadow an incredible match between Nick Wayne, Jordan Oliver, and Alex Shelley. So full report is up right now at postwrestling.com. And, you know, from some of the reaction that I've seen from Deathmatch Wrestling fans, it's that there is a careful way of doing Deathmatch Wrestling, despite, you know, how reckless it's supposed to look on screen. There are rules, presumably, that people should be abiding by. And I suppose stabbing an artery with a light tube is not one of those. Anyway, so if you're looking for a bit of a wake up this morning, you can go and potentially check that clip out that's up there right now on the internet. Finally here, Kate, Raw and SmackDown and AEW Rampage tonight. Let's start off here with SmackDown.
Don't scare me like that.
Yeah, no 3 hours tonight. Raw and SmackDown. You're holding up incredibly well, considering the 2 hours of sleep, I have to say, Kate. But whether or not you'll be making it up for tonight, well, let me know, because we have Raquel Rodriguez, Lacey Evans, and Shotzi squaring off against Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, and Asuka in a battle of the brands. Battle of the bands. Sign me up. Oh, yeah. Who'd be the drummer? Who'd be the bassist here in this thing?
I'd love to see Asuka playing the drums with the wild hair and her energy. That's all I want.
I think Liv would be Shotzi would be a cool bassist. I think, you know, Shotzi. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, she maybe lead singer. What am I saying? Raquel would be the bassist.
Yeah.
And I guess Lacey would be a guitarist, I think.
I think with those other ones, I'm now trying to figure out how Lacey fits into this little diagram. Like, I can put Liv, Shotzi, and Asuka together pretty quickly. So maybe they'd just be like a sort of power trio. And I guess, I don't know, the others would.
Vince should tear up that script right now and instead take the R out, make it a battle of the
bands. Oh, he will.
But it is unfortunately at current standing a battle of the brands. So that is taking place ahead of Money in the Bank between all six competitors on Sunday. I believe there's seven competitors, aren't there?
I did think there were supposed to be. And I'm trying to think. I think there is still one position.
Becky's
left.
There.
So Becky, yes. No, sorry. Yeah, that's Becky. It. They filled it on Monday.
Yes, of course.
Interesting that she's the one left out here. Although it kind of makes sense. Like, she is your biggest star. Maybe you don't want her involved in this match.
Also on the show, the New Day look to repel the raid of the Viking Raiders. Okay, the raid of the Viking Raiders. There you go. So plenty of alliteration ahead of the newly heel Viking Raiders. And I believe we're supposed to find out our final men's entrant into the Money in the Bank as well.
So that's the one that's still outstanding.
So that is SmackDown. Now, AEW Rampage pre-taped already from Detroit, from what is said to be, again, a tremendously hot crowd from Wednesday. The Royal Rampage, featuring 20 competitors, with the winner receiving their first shot at AEW Interim World Champion, John Moxley. There are plenty of people in this, among them Orange Cassidy, Keith Lee, Powerhouse Hobbs, Penta, Konosuke Takeshita, Hangman Page is a part of this, Roosh, Darby Allin, Swerve Scott, Max Caster, Matt Hardy, Brody King. I have read spoilers, so I will not reveal my thoughts on it. But
Kate, I have not.
Okay, what are your thoughts?
I have not read spoilers. I'm a little hamstrung because I heard you and John discussing this the other day, and I agree that there's a very delicate balance you have to hit depending on when you're going to have this match, because who wins it, I think, is determined by when you're going to have it, whether it's going to be on TV, whether it's going to be on Battle of the Belts. And you have guys of at different levels of, I guess, seniority or priority within the company, I think. Going back to Darby Allin and John Moxley was a match they did very early on, and it was very entertaining, scary at times, but that's one they could go to. But I don't know if Darby feels a little too high profile for TV at this point. Could be. I don't know. Like, Keith Lee feels a little, again, he feels like too big, but no pun intended, an opponent to just put on TV. Especially if you're just going to have him lose. I'm not, I would not be entirely surprised to see an outsider like Takeshita or Roosh take it, but I don't know what happened. Everyone else can laugh at me when I inevitably get this wrong. So
also on the show, we have the Young Bucks taking on the team of Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi on the show. Yes. New Japan Pro Wrestling Forbidden Door. Leftovers. I mean, that sounds terrible, but we have the Young Bucks. This is not a tag team title match, so this is their chance to earn a tag team title shot if Goto and Yoshihashi end up winning. We also have Nyla Rose versus Toni Storm. Any thoughts on either of those two matches, Kate?
I crap on WWE all the time for doing this. You fight the champions for a chance to fight the champions. So same with AEW. I don't love this. I think you either give them the shot or you don't. I guess the reason why you don't give them the shot here is because the ending would be so clear.
The rankings as well. I think they have to justify in some way.
Yeah. I think I don't know what the workaround would have been, but I don't like this way of doing it. Toni versus Nyla, I'm interested in. Like, that's, we haven't seen Toni, I don't think, face there isn't another real powerhouse like Nyla in the AEW women's division. So I'm looking forward to it because I think Toni does such a good underdog, and that's very much the role she's going to be cast in here. So I expect that one to be entertaining.
Yeah, now Toni Storm, of course, coming off of a failed title challenge against Thunder Rosa on Sunday. So we shall see if what her next storyline might
win.
Be. Yeah. So I will be back again with John Pollock tonight for Rewind to SmackDown / Rampage. Again, it's the first of the month. It's July 1, the first of the month. So sign up at postwrestlingcafe.com for a bunch of bonus shows, including Rewind to SmackDown tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, live for all patrons. Kate, I think you should sleep less more often when we're doing these shows, because I thought you were fantastic here. Great takes, sharp
thank
as
you
ever.
So much.
Where can people find more of you?
You can find me on Twitter. I am She Rants About Wrestling, which is at SheRantsMTL. I cover a lot of wrestling and wrestling adjacent stuff there, a lot of opinions. So if you like what you heard here, then
a lot of great opinions. If you're looking for a link to the Logan Paul KSI story, that is up there as well. She finds great things and she watches a lot and she rants a whole lot, so do check her out. I will be back later tonight, and until then, see you guys later. Bye bye.